Well, good evening, everyone. I'm excited to be back in your beautiful community. Have had a wonderful Sunday at UBC this morning. We baptized three young women who are following Jesus, and just so exciting to stand with them and to celebrate with them. And so that was a huge, it's always one of our favorite Sundays at UBC. We pull out a hot tub and put it right in the sidewalk outside of our building, and it's been just a wonderful day that way. And then had the privilege of going to watch one of our students competing in a track and field time trial. And she came in under her time, which means she heads to Turkey next month. And if she gets past that, she is going to Paris in the 2024 Olympics. So just an amazing story. If, I don't know, anyone a runner here? Anyone? I see one brave soul there. So this is for you. So she did 15 kilometers in 1 hour and 12 minutes. So she's a speed walker. And let me tell you, I probably can't bike as fast as she was walking, but it was amazing. Out of the thousands of pictures captured that day, one in particular stood out. January 6th, 2021, the day the U.S. Capitol came under attack by supporters of Donald Trump as he tried to overturn the election results through violence and force. Throughout the day, photographers captured images of the chaos and rage and destructive behavior of the mob. But then, at 1 o'clock in the morning, a different picture was taken. In the Capitol building rotunda, in the quietness of the night, was a man dressed in a suit on his hands and knees, picking up garbage and debris for an hour and a half. His name is Andy Kim, a congressman elected by his home state of New Jersey to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. Andy was born to immigrant parents. He was raised with a beautiful Christian faith. And his actions stood in stark contrast to the events of the day. Here is a person who had title, who had an influential position, on his hands and his knees, quietly picking up the broken pieces of the day. Kim was later asked why he did it. And here's what he said. I was just overwhelmed with emotion. It's a room I love so much. It's the heart of the Capitol, literally the heart of our country. It really broke my heart to see it in this condition. I just felt compelled to do something. What else could I do? When you see something you love that's broken, you want to fix it. In the midst of the chaos and destruction, Andy Kim's actions seem so counterintuitive, so unusual. It's why that picture stood out among all the many thousands of other ones taken that day. And yet it is the same type of example and action we are invited to live out over and over again as Jesus followers. So where does this invitation and example and compelling action come from? So what we're going to talk about tonight is we wrap up our series on the paradoxes of Jesus. Today's theme is centered around Jesus' paradoxical words that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. And here's a story we're going to look at during our time together. It takes place the night before Jesus' death as he spends his final moments with his disciples. John chapter 13. Begins with these words. Before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. He had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything and that he had come from God and would return to God. So he got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. And then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around him. When Jesus came to Simon Peter, Peter said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You don't understand now what I am doing, but someday you will." "No," Peter protested, "you will never, ever wash my feet." Jesus replied, "Unless I wash you, you won't belong to me." Peter exclaimed, "Then wash my hands and head as well, Lord, not just my feet." Jesus replied, "A person who's bathed all over doesn't need to wash except for the feet to be entirely clean. And you disciples are clean, but not all of you," for Jesus knew who would betray him. And that's what he meant when he said, "Not all of you are clean." After washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, "Do you understand what I was doing? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done unto you. I tell you the truth, slaves are not greater than their master, nor is the messenger more important than the one who sends the message. Now that you know these things, God will bless you for doing them." And then verse 34. "Now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." There's a couple of layers to this story that I want to unpack for us today, and then we'll look at what it can mean for our lives. The first is the literal context of what was going on in this actual story. So a bit of background. In the ancient Near East, people didn't wear Air Jordans or Blundstones. As cool as that would have been, they wore sandals, and not the Birkenstock or Teva kind either. Sandals were basically a piece of leather that were held together by some rope. There's no pavement anywhere, just dirty, dusty, sometimes muddy roads used by humans for walking on and used by animals for, let's say, other things. Add in some sweltering heat and humidity. It doesn't take much to imagine the smell that would hit your nasal cavity. And so when a guest would come into your home or when your family would gather together at the end of the day, it was necessary to deal with all those dusty, dirty, sweaty feet. Aren't you glad you came tonight? Well, who got picked to do that task? Slaves, servants, the lowest ranking member of the household, and sadly, given the patriarchal system, usually a female. It was the worst of jobs. No kidding. And so that's the context here as Jesus gathers with his disciples to share a final meal with them. Everyone's been sitting around the table with their dirty, stinking feet sticking out, which I'm sure added so richly to the ambience of the night. Everyone wondering why no one has washed their feet yet and waiting for someone else to do it. And then the unthinkable happens. Jesus, without any fanfare, gets up from the table, takes off his robe, picks up a towel and ties it around his waist. He grabs a bowl of water, and he kneels down, nose level to all those dirt-encrusted, stinky feet. Feet that belong to someone who will betray him, someone who will deny him, and the rest who will leave him in the moment he needed them most. And yet he begins to wash them. The room goes silent. The disciples can't figure out what's going on. Why is Jesus, their leader, their teacher, on his hands and knees, touching and washing their dirty feet, doing the job no one else wanted to do, doing the job meant for the lowest of the low? It was beyond shocking because it was an example and an action that was unheard of. In fact, biblical commentator Frederick Dale Bruner writes that there is no parallel in existing ancient literature for a person of superior status voluntarily washing the feet of someone of inferior status. But Jesus is doing what he does so many times. He is flipping the existing structure and system upside down. Here is the God of the universe, the one who stepped into our world as a baby, now kneeling beside the dirty feet of humans in this humble, self-giving love and service. A God who comes not to be served, but to serve. A God who isn't afraid to get his hands dirty, who doesn't back away from messiness and grime, who instead gets down in the dust and the muck and the grime of our lives, kneeling beside us, sharing fully with us in our stories and in our experiences. And he is the one who now also invites us to do the same. We read those words earlier where Jesus says, since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I've given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. There's a second layer to this story, a symbolic meaning about the physical washing that takes us even deeper into Jesus' heart and love for us. The beginning of the foot washing story provides a clue when it says that Jesus had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. Less than 24 hours from this moment, Jesus, with his last gasp of air, will utter the word, finished. It's the same word used in both places, to the very end and finished. And so it's letting us know that there is a connection and a parallel between the action of Jesus washing his disciples' feet and what Jesus experiences dying on the cross. Both serve as an example of divine love, God's love in radical action to his very last breath. And so the literal act of foot washing is to display humility and self-giving service to others as an example for us to follow. And the symbolic act of foot washing is to open our hearts and eyes to Jesus' ultimate expression of self-giving love unto death. And so when Jesus takes off his robes and he kneels on the ground in front of his disciples, it is this powerful image of his entire life and mission as he strips himself in order to serve humanity. Listen to these incredible words Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2. When the time came, Jesus set aside the privileges of deity and took on the status of a slave, becoming human. Having become human, he stayed human. It was an incredibly humbling process. He didn't claim special privilege. Instead, he lived a selfless, obedient life and then died a selfless, obedient death, and the worst kind of death at that. Crucifixion. As Frederick Bruner points out, the foot washing symbolizes the deep descent of God, even to the feet of human beings, to serve and rescue them. The foot washing story is a picture about the cross. Jesus' ultimate act of humility, where he serves our deepest need as humans, our need for forgiveness, the washing away of the dirt that we carry, the healing of our shame and guilt, the picking up and the repairing of the messy, broken pieces of our lives. Just as physical washing was done so that a guest could get clean and enter into the home, Jesus' foot washing, his work on the cross, was done so that we could enter his home, his family, his life. Jesus' work on the cross cleanses us and washes us completely. And even though our feet might get dusty as we live in our world, the deep cleansing work has been done, finished to the end by love itself. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's why this foot washing story is so powerful and life changing. I know that's a lot of content to process, but I think it brings us to this question. What does it mean for us today? What can it look like in our own lives? How can we live from that same reality and experience? From this place of Jesus serving us by washing us and making us new. From this place of being welcomed into God's family and home. Now comes the invitation, the ability for us to serve each other and the people around us with the same self-giving love of Jesus. Look again at his words that come at the end of the foot washing moment. I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. I don't think Jesus is asking us to do actual foot washing ceremonies as a demonstration of love. I told our community this morning, I was part of a ceremony before like that at a previous church. As you might imagine, it was quite awkward and uncomfortable. And even though that's not necessarily a bad reminder or experience, it just didn't feel like the point Jesus is making. Because our culture, our context has changed. It's really not a cleanliness issue anymore or an expectation of service when you walk into someone's home. But I think it needs to go beyond that one specific literal example so we can get to the deeper meaning and purpose and heartbeat behind it. It's about self-giving love, putting aside our own interests and privileges for the sake of others, coming alongside people who are covered in all sorts of dust and dirt in their lives, people carrying pain and broken pieces. And it's allowing others to do the same for us. It's about how we show love and care for each other. And here's the thing. It's going to be risky at times and costly and messy. And yes, sometimes even stinky. And it'll mean getting someone else's dirt on us. Sometimes physically, also emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It'll also mean getting our own dirt onto others, which is pretty humbling. But it's been said, the world belongs to the few people who are not afraid to get their hands dirty. It'll require a change of posture, living, kneeling with this attitude and posture of self-giving love. But I promise you, it will be worth it. Stephen Bauman, in his book Possible, says, living unafraid yet vulnerable has the potential to set the world on fire because faith is most attractive when it is least selfish. So what can that look like? I think of our dear friends Kurt and Charlene, our friends Pat and Cammie, who've walked so much of life with our family. We've done the same with their families as well, sharing the ups and downs, struggles, the dusty moments of life. I'll never forget Pat and Cammie kneeling and sitting on the floor with us, holding us as we cried and grieved through a difficult previous church experience. It was Jesus' love being displayed at literally a floor and foot level. I'll never forget Cammie coming to look after our son, Nevin, in the early hours of the morning while Michelle, our daughter Katie, and I were in the emergency room, all three of us, after getting hit with the Norwalk virus. Cammie came over, cleaned our bathrooms, our bed sheets, which I assure you were not in the best condition. Her life, her actions have been shaped by Jesus' love that continues to move her towards others, even when it's a pretty yucky situation. That's what foot washing looks like. I think of a couple that used to come to our site, Matt and Esther. They gave up a huge chunk of their time to drive from UBC all the way out to our home in Langley to drop off groceries for us in the early days of COVID, when we were quarantined and we couldn't leave our house. We were able to do the same for them at a later time. This morning, I mentioned our wonderful life group leaders at 10th UBC, and I know it's the same here and at all of our different sites. People who have opened up their homes and lives and wallets and at UBC, kitchen pantries to serve and walk alongside so many students in our community. People that are there to pray and encourage and let others know that they are seen and not alone. That's what foot washing looks like. I think of our kids teams, volunteers at all of our sites, shout out to Sarah, who show up every Sunday and teach our little ones what faith and Jesus look like. That's foot washing. Our prayer teams, our volunteers, our community, showing up in all sorts of ways to serve. That is foot washing. I think of Mim Wickett, her wonderful team who are serving newcomers to Canada, showing the love of Jesus with generosity and hospitality, serving in all sorts of practical ways. Perhaps author Ruth Simon puts it best when she asks this question: what if God is changing the world through the so-called hidden places of our living rooms, local coffee shops, or at our kitchen tables? Such a great question. I think that's what foot washing looks like today. Whether that's in your life group, your dorm, your classroom, your workplace, your apartment complex, this evening community, your neighborhood, wherever Jesus has you right now. Sometimes it'll be found in a single act of humility and kindness and love that's shown to another person, or it might extend for a period of time and a season of time. But it's a commitment to journey life and to walk alongside each other in the ups and the downs and the messiness of life. It's also true, we can be motivated by service, by duty, by care. And that's good. There are a lot of people who don't necessarily claim faith, who are kind and compassionate and loving and who serve others in incredible ways. And I want to acknowledge their gift and service to our world, because that's a beautiful thing and we need more of that. But when we are first and foremost motivated and shaped by Jesus' love, his self-giving love, it takes us even further. And we may not always be able to pinpoint the difference, but people will recognize that something much deeper is going on. I can't tell you the number of times working in non-Christian environments where over time people will ask me, what's different about you? You have a different kind of kindness and compassion attitude than other people here. It's not about me. But there is something intangible that happens when our actions come from a heart and a life that is being transformed by Jesus' self-giving love. Carries an impact that moves us way past our own ability and strength. But I believe that they are actions and words and attitudes and moments that will ultimately last throughout eternity and in the life to come. I began this message with the image of Andy Kim picking up garbage on his hands and knees, getting his hands dirty with the broken pieces of the day. Title and position didn't matter. He just wanted to see the broken parts fixed. He did it because he wanted to see the beauty of the room he loved so much to be brought back to what he knew it could look like, what it was supposed to look like, to become beautiful once again. And so in humility and love, he knelt there and served. What an incredible metaphor for the life we're invited to as Jesus followers, to step out with humility and courage and love, to kneel in the broken places of the life around us, to walk alongside others who are broken, who are caked with the messiness and dust and dirt of life, including our own selves, and to serve out of the self-giving love we've been shown, allowing the life of Jesus to wash us and make us new, and seeing the broken pieces of our lives become healed and restored and made beautiful once again. May it be so. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit.